This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. The face of fear. Arena's gut-wrenching look of terror when she is fatally stabbed by a convict, of course, out on bond. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
At just 23 years old, refugee Irina Zarudzka leaves everything behind to start a new life in the United States with her family. She dives right in, making friends, taking care of her neighbors, and exploring new places. Her future seems bright, but the American dream isn't as promising as she hoped.
Just shaking us to the core that this beautiful young girl leaves Ukraine to come here to chase the American dream, to leave the violence, the poverty, the war-torn drama in Ukraine. And she makes it. Her dream comes true. She comes to the U.S. only to be stabbed dead on public transportation by a guy with arrest now bordering on 20 arrests, 14 that we know. Look at her. She's minding her own business. Oh, dear. This is the guy. And these are just a few of the photos, let me say, the photos I have of him. There are so many more. Why did Irina have to die? This is causing reverberations all the way to D.C. Listen.
On August 22nd, Irina Zarudzka was stabbed to death on the rail system in Charlotte, North Carolina, by a savage career criminal. This is a public transportation system that many in the area use every single day to go to school and work. Irina was on the train that night traveling home from her job at a pizzeria, still in uniform from her shift. This beautiful, innocent 23-year-old young woman was a Ukrainian refugee who had recently fled her country for a chance at a safer life and a promising new beginning here in the United States of America.
Irina is traveling on the East-West Boulevard light rail station, Charlotte, North Carolina. Headed home after working at a local pizza restaurant, Irina is by herself as she takes a seat and is on her phone listening with earbuds. Sitting directly behind Irina is 34-year-old DeCarlos Brown. The ride is uneventful until Brown stands up and without warning stabs Irina in the neck. Brown then walks away as Irina grabs her neck, trying to stop the flow of blood.
Just such a blow to the U.S. That original sound from Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary from our friends at Fox, that this young girl leaves behind a war-torn zone to seek the American dream and then get stabbed dead on the train by a guy who's now saying it was because she was Russian? What? Wait a minute. How did he know about her accent? Had he been stalking her? Did he know enough to hear her speak? Claiming she was Russian, so he stabbed her dead? Joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. But listen.
Passengers aboard the train look on as Irina bleeds out in front of them. As the suspect walks away, nobody confronts him. Blood is dripping on the floor from the knife and from Irina, but nobody offers her any help. Instead, some of the passengers on the train use their phones to video what is taking place. One of the passengers calls 911.
Oh, my stars. The girl is lying on the floor bleeding out. Look at these people videoing her. What a bunch of blood-sucking ghouls. Look at that. Who are these people? No one helping her as she bleeds out on the floor? Instead, they video her? Okay, that's a whole nother can of worms. These people are ghouls. Ghouls straight out of hell. To Lauren Conlon joining us, investigative reporter, co-host of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, I want to circle back to what happened. Let's start at the beginning. What do we know?
Yes, Arena was leaving her job at the pizza place where she worked. And listen, Nancy, she did everything right. She came to the United States in 2022. She got her work visa and she was working multiple jobs, one at the pizza place, one at an assisted living facility. And she was also helping animals, neighborhood animals who needed care. So Arena boarded this light rail that she took very frequently to go to and from work. So she boarded the train around 9:46 p.m. on August 22nd, 2025. And unfortunately, she sat directly in front of DeCarlos Brown Jr. And we've seen the footage about 4 minutes later after she boarded. That's when he got up and he subsequently stabbed her 3 times. And as you mentioned earlier, and this is what the most troubling thing is, I think, about the whole thing. I mean, obviously, the stabbing is just terrible, but it took 2 full minutes for bystanders to attempt to render aid. 2 full minutes. Now, I don't know if she would
have. And most of them just stood around videoing her. Only, I believe, one guy tried to really help her and staunch the flow of blood. Everybody else just kept videoing her. Look at these people. What is wrong with them? And I want to go to Joe Scott Morgan joining me right now, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet, host of Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan. It's a hit podcast series, but he, most importantly, is a death investigator who has literally investigated thousands of death scenes, be they accidental, undetermined, suicide, homicide. Joe Scott, thank you for being with us. Explain to me how she bled out so quickly on the floor of that train.
Well, she's in our neck. We have this massive structure of vessels, both veins and arteries, that are running through here. Remember, we have to have supply for our brain. It's the most vascular organ in the body, so it's a tremendous amount of blood going upward. Eclipse these vessels. It's probably the internal jugular, probably the carotid, and there's even facial arteries that run up here to supply our face with blood. If you're going to clip somebody with an edged weapon wanting to bring about their death, this is the number one spot to go through or to go to. And there's throughout history, there have been attacks where people have had their throats cut. This is very similar to that, Nancy. I think that this is evidence certainly of intent to do grievous bodily harm. A matter of fact, bringing about this young woman's death.
Joe Scott, as she lay there on the floor, the floor of a public rapid transit train, how long did it take her to die? Did she know what was happening? I mean, clearly, she's cognizant because she shrinks in and looks around. She did not die immediately. She suffered, Joe Scott.
No, she didn't die immediately. However, the death would have followed first unconsciousness, because the brain is not being oxygenated at that point in time. The blood that she had remaining is the only thing keeping her alive. There's no way to stem this. Nancy, if you look at the blood deposition just on the floor, you can even see it in that still shot on her pants. This blood has gone everywhere. We know that the volume of blood here, this is consistent. Now, that's passive dropping, which from a forensic standpoint is hugely demonstrative. Nancy, can you imagine having this evidence in courtroom? Because you can actually show.
Wait a minute. Just got, look at the picture. Everybody's just sitting there like nothing happened. Look.
Yeah. It's inundated. The floor is, and you go back to where she is. It would have been an absolute horror show back there. She's bleeding out. Probably when she hit the floor, you can apply direct pressure to a wound like that. But Nancy, the internal damage, I would suspect, was so grievous that she would not have survived. Even if you had had a team of surgeons standing by there with her, she wouldn't have had a shot. This is a wholly lethal event. I think that this shows intent. And right here, look at him reaching in his pocket. That's a folding knife he's got, Nancy. He's unfolding that. He's getting ready to engage. He stands up and attacks her right there. And it was that quick.
I believe, Joe Scott Morgan, the blood droplets you're talking about that we just showed are from the killer, because he just walks off with the blood dripping, literally dripping from the knife, and nobody does anything. Listen.
DeCarlos Brown walks up and down the aisle before the train stops, at times stepping in Irina's blood, spreading it in the walkway. Brown is not approached by anyone on the train, and as the train pulls into the station, he deboards as if nothing has taken place. Irina Zarutska is bleeding to death on the train. As Brown exits the train, police locate a folding pocket knife nearby that is covered in blood. Irina is found laying on her back next to a large amount of blood and a stab wound in the middle of her neck.
Do you see him changing shirts? Can we see that video again? Kelly Hyman joining us, high-profile lawyer joining us out of the Florida jurisdiction, star of Once Upon a Crime in Hollywood podcast. Kelly, the fact that he, keep rolling, changes his shirt to hide all the blood on his hoodie, that is clearly consciousness of guilt.
This is a horrible tragedy, Nancy. And we're watching the video right now of him changing his shirt. Now, this is something that never should have happened and hopefully will never happen again, that someone who comes to this country for promise and hope and for a new life is killed on mass transit.
Changing shirt, evidence of guilt. That's what I'm saying, Kelly. Why?
It potentially shows evidence of guilt because it goes to his state of mind.
You know, to Dr. Sue Kornbluth joining us, owner of Dr. Sue and You, author of Building Self-Esteem in Children. Dr. Sue, he didn't want people to see his bloody shirt when he got off the train. Why didn't he want people to see his bloody shirt? Because that would indicate he's the killer. That's why it shows evidence of guilt. He knows what he did was wrong. That shows he knows it was wrong. He's trying to get rid of the evidence.
Well, that brings this topic up, which other people are claiming that he's mentally ill and that he didn't know what he was doing. But as you can see right here, oh, he knows what he's doing, right? Taking off his shirt, putting something else on to cover up the evidence that he has. So this is interesting, right? Was he mentally ill? Wasn't he mentally ill? What happened here? That's what I would like to know, Nancy, and I'm sure everybody else wants to know that, too.
And Tom Green joining us, former Chief Deputy, Washoe County Sheriff's Homicide Detective, also currently owner, Nevada Investigative Services. Tom, he also got rid of the weapon. He got rid of the weapon and hid his bloody shirt. Evidence of guilt. Evidence he knew what he did was wrong. And someone may have a mental illness before or after the incident. But what matters in our jurisprudence, this is the law. Whether anybody else agrees or not, the law is, if you know right from wrong, at the time of the incident, you are not insane. It's called the old McNaughton test, and it is brought over from Great Britain. It was brought here to the U.S., and it is part of our common law. What is common law? Common law is case law. There's statutory law, which is the code, the criminal code, the red, black and white letter of the law that's been passed by the legislatures. And then there is common law. Commonly used law. The old McNaughton test is the common law in the U.S. There are a few exceptions to it. There are modifications to it. Some jurisdictions don't even have insanity, like Idaho doesn't even have the insanity defense. But where it exists, such as North Carolina, this jurisdiction, if you know right and wrong at the time of the event, you are sane and therefore responsible. What does this indicate to you, Tom Green?
Well, it indicates consciousness of guilt. And then, you know, also if you watch that video, it appears that he's deliberating with himself before he makes the overt act of stabbing her in the neck.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can see him basically talking to himself. And I've read reports that he was overheard muttering to himself. You know, clearly he takes that knife out. He does the stabbing. Like you said, then he attempts to flee the scene. There's nowhere to go. So he has to change his appearance. He takes off his sweatshirt. Is probably covering his hand because I think he also got cut, my understanding. And then, as you said, he discards the evidence when he leaves the rail.
Passengers aboard the train look on as Irina bleeds out in front of them. As the suspect walks away, nobody confronts him. Blood is dripping on the floor from the knife and from Irina, but nobody offers her any help. Instead, some of the passengers on the train use their phones to video what is taking place. One of the passengers calls 911. Known for her love of animals and art, Irina dreams of becoming a veterinary assistant. Her tight-knit family supports her as she adapts to life in the U.S., mastering English and landing a job at a pizza restaurant. But one fateful Friday night, on her journey home, things take a terrifying turn.
So innocent, so hardworking. This girl dead because an ex-con was walking out free on bond, thanks, Judge, with a rap sheet as long as I-75 there on the train to murder this girl. Those are only a few of this guy's mugshots, and this has echoed all the way to D.C. Listen.
Surveillance video of the killing was finally released to the public this past Friday. It shows the alleged killer, DeCarlos Brown Jr., pull out a knife, get up from his seat behind Irina, and prepare to thrust a blade into her neck before the released footage gets cut. This is pure evil on full display.
Surveillance video shows suspect DeCarlos Brown sitting behind Irina. He takes a knife out of his pocket, unfolds the blade, and strikes Irina Zarudska three times from behind. She never saw it coming. As Brown walks away down the aisle in the middle of the train, blood is seen dripping from the knife onto the floor.
You earlier heard the White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt speaking from our friends at Fox. You know, Joe Scott Morgan, a professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University death investigator, he stabbed her multiple times. And the law is, I'm going to get Kelly Hyman on this in just a moment, the law is that intent can be formed in the blink of an eye, just like that, and the twinkling of a moment. In other words, in the time it takes, as I use for juries, to raise the gun and pull the trigger. That's long enough for intent. It does not require a long premeditated plan, such as poisoning someone over the course of weeks and months till they die. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require any real period of time at all. And I gave you the gun comparison, but in this case, Joe Scott, he stabbed her multiple times, which requires a lift and a stab, a lift and a stab, a lift and a stab. Added to the time that you pointed out that he's fumbling around in his pocket to get the knife. All of that takes time, Joe Scott. What do you believe was the force, the weighted force necessary to penetrate her carotid?
Not very much. Hey, did you notice something, Nancy? He didn't pick on a 250-pound construction worker with a hard hat, now did he? He picked on this young woman who literally, I'm looking at her, she reminds me of my daughter when my daughter was this age, built like a ballerina. She might weigh maybe 110 pounds, perhaps, and this big guy goes after her. It's almost like throwing a brick through a stained glass window. Why are you going to do this? What's the purpose behind this? He's thinking about this. I can tell you this. He sure as hell wasn't unfolding that knife so he could pick his nails or peel an apple back there. He's summoning up. It's not courage. It's certainly not courage. He's summoning up the maximum amount of evil he can as he savages this poor girl.
Yeah, you know what? Roll that back one more time, because you see him not only fish around for the knife, you see him open up the blade as he's looking through his pockets. Right there. He opened the blade. That takes time. Kelly Hyman, veteran trial lawyer, that's more than enough time under the law to form intent to kill.
Intent is key for the first degree charge against him, Nancy, and you bring up a really good point. In the blink of an instant is going to be key for this case, that at that moment he had the specific intent to harm and harm this woman.
You know, Tom Green, following up on what Joe Scott Morgan said, he didn't pick on a 300-pound linebacker the size of a fridge. He picked on this little girl. To me, that is a predator. That is a predator that picks his victim knowingly, with consciousness aforethought.
I agree. I mean, he did. He looked like a predator and she looked like prey. She had no idea that attack was coming. You saw the surprise on her face, the terror, the fear, and the shock. I mean, it's just, it's a horrific crime.
Well, to me, all of that, Tom, goes to intent. Look at her. Oh, my goodness. Just, you know, amazingly physically beautiful, but Lauren Conlon, beautiful on the inside as well. Explain.
Irina really cared about animals in need. She volunteered and helped neighborhood animals if they were, you know, hurt or harmed in any way. And she was said to be an amazing and passionate artist. And per her family, Nancy, she just loved the United States. I mean, she was living in a bunker in Ukraine before she came here, obviously trying to escape the war. She loved America, and that's why her family wants her to be buried here.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
War-torn Ukraine, where she was living in a bomb shelter, 23-year-old Irina Zarutska immigrates with her mother, sister, and brother to the United States. A graduate of Synergy College in Art and Restoration, she shares her creativity with family and friends, creating personal works of art for gifts and marking special occasions and exploring new places. But Irina's a homebody at heart, happiest surrounded by her pets and family, and dreams of a career as a veterinary assistant. After her shift, the college graduate boards the train, unknowingly sitting in front of DeCarlos Brown, a man with a violent past. Little does she know, Brown is about to alter the course of her night.
You heard who Irina was, living in a bunker in Ukraine, a bomb shelter. Finally, her dream comes true. She makes it to the U.S. only to meet up with DeCarlos Brown. So, we know who she is. Who is he?
The most enraging and unacceptable part of this story is that her death was entirely preventable. DeCarlos Brown never should have been on that train that night. In fact, he should have been behind bars. DeCarlos Brown has been charged with crimes no fewer than 14 times, dating back to 2011, including for armed robbery, felony larceny, breaking and entering, and shoplifting. Brown had previously served 5 years in prison for a robbery with a deadly weapon charge, and he had also forfeited bonds three different times.
DeCarlos Brown was born and raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, and has a criminal record dating back to 2011. Many charges are for communicating threats and injury to property that were dismissed by Mecklenburg District Attorneys Andrew Murray and Spencer Merriweather. In April 2014, Brown pleaded guilty to two 2013 charges of felony larceny and breaking and entering. A judge suspended his sentence of 5 to 15 months in prison. Instead, the judge ordered he serve 2 years probation.
Oh, dear Lord. So he pleads guilty to two charges, felony larceny and breaking and entering. But the judge, do we have a picture of the judge? Suspends the sentence and gives him 2 years probation. Straight. Thanks, judge. Thanks. 2 years straight probation. He walks out free. You happy, judge? Are you happy the guy pled guilty and took a sentence of jail time and then the judge suspended the sentence? Earlier, Levitt speaking from our friends at Fox and Friend, but guys, this is just the tip of the iceberg. Our screen doesn't have room for all of his mugshots. Listen.
4 months into probation, Brown robs a man in South Charlotte. Brown paced the complex for an hour before brandishing a handgun. He demands the victim's phone and money and left in a 2001 Dodge Caravan with the man's Samsung Galaxy Note, $450, and $100 Limpura Honduras currency note. Police found Brown's car at an apartment owned by his mother. He was cooperative with officers at first and allowed officers to go inside. When officers found the stolen items, he grew irate and asked officers to leave. They don't leave. They arrest Brown. Brown pleaded guilty to robbery with a dangerous weapon and was sentenced to a maximum of 8 years, 4 months. He served 5 years, 7 months before being released from Central Prison.
Kelly Hyman, that's a whole other can of worms. When I was negotiating felony pleas and or trying felonies, let's just say a young man comes in with five hits of crack. All right. I could go with intent to distribute on that. Five hits, was he going to do all that himself? That's one thing. But if he has a gun, that is a whole nother animal. Because when you have a gun, that means you're up to hurting somebody else. So it's not just that he was calling 911 and misusing 911. It's not just he went into somebody's house and stole something. He had a weapon on more than one occasion. And that kicks it up several notches. And who in the hay let this guy walk after brandishing weapons? And they keep referring to a robbery. It was not a robbery. He had a weapon when he committed that robbery. That's been pled down, as we say. A robbery is a lot lighter sentence than an armed robbery. An armed robbery, even if it's a fake toy gun, a fake rubber knife, much less a real knife or a real gun, you start at a minimum of 5 years hard jail time. Minimum. So if you can get your prosecutor to come off armed and say, look, sentence me to 10 years on robbery, not five on armed, because on robbery, you'll walk in about a year, 2 years max. On armed robbery, you have a minimum of five. So somebody pled that down and let him plead to robbery versus armed robbery. But I mean, brandishing a weapon, he should have been behind bars.
The punishment should fit the crime, Nancy. And you bring up a really good point about talking about the fact that there was a gun involved and how that heightens the crime as well. And we think about if, in fact, he was behind bars, that this wouldn't happen. This young, beautiful woman would not have lost her life, that there needs to be some type of change, that hopefully this can shed light on the fact that such a young woman, so beautiful, with so much hope, lost her life, and she did that, and hopefully there'll be some type of justice for her family.
Lauren Collin, I want to talk about the judge, but first, listen to more. This guy got so many breaks from the system. A fleet of defense attorneys helped him. Cases were pled down by prosecutors, but most important, the judge, listen.
Despite all of this past documented criminal history, when Brown was arrested yet again in January of this past year, a Democrat judge released this insane criminal once again without requiring him to pay any bail. He simply had to sign a written promise to return for his court hearing. Think about how crazy it is to ask a career criminal, someone who by definition repeatedly breaks the law, to just sign a written promise and come back again another day. This is madness. This monster should have been locked up, and Arena should still be alive.
That's Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, speaking. What is she talking about? Oh, wait till you hear this.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Listen.
In September 2022, Brown arrested on assault on a female and injury to property. April 2024, Brown arrested for misusing 911. May 2024, misusing 911. January 2025, misusing 911. January 2025, Judge Teresa Stokes released Brown the same day he was arrested on a written promise to appear. Brown did not present himself for evaluation. 3 weeks later, he is alleged to have killed Irina. If that order was followed, he would have been evaluated weeks before the stabbing. The public defender in his murder charge filed a motion questioning Brown's mental capacity, and Wiggins again ordered he be evaluated. Police have not identified any motive or linked the attack to mental illness.
Oh, my stars. Okay. Lauren Conlon, this guy's a career criminal. And the judge, Teresa Stokes, says, okay, I'm going to cut you loose. I'm doing you a big favor, but now you got to promise, pinky promise, that you'll come back to court again. Pinky promised, just promise to Carlos Brown that you'll come back. What the hey was she thinking?
I have no words, Nancy. The fact that he was walking on the street after she knows what he's done. She knows these assaults that occurred. She knows that he had 14 prior arrests with weapons. He had previously assaulted, bit his own sister. So the fact, again, that he was released on a written promise to appear is incredibly, incredibly concerning. And at this point, Republicans in North Carolina are asking her to step down. They are writing letters.
Put her up. I really don't care who's a Democrat and who's a Republican, okay? Don't care. This is beyond anything political. I don't care if you're red or blue or green or purple. Show me the video, please, New York Control Room. I don't care who you vote for in the secrecy of the voting booth. If you do not believe that this is pure evil, and the judge who let him walk, really all of them, it wasn't just one, should get off the bench. They're too out of it. They must be too complacent. They haven't been in the real world. They've been in their ivory tower office in the courthouse way too long. They need to look at this every single day. Because of them, he was walking free and she's dead. You know what? I don't think they care. Kelly Hyman, judges, not all of them, but so many of them don't care. Get off the bench. If you don't care, get the H-E-double-L out of the courthouse. I've had judges that just want to clear the calendar. They want to clear the calendar. I had a judge, an amazing judge, Judge Luther Alverson, and he was hell-bent that we would have the lowest jail count of anybody in the courthouse. Why? Because he was so old that he could have been forced into mandatory retirement, but he was already on the bench when mandatory retirement was enacted. He wanted the jail count low. What's a jail count? That's how many people are sitting in jail waiting for you, the judge, to adjudicate their case. And if you've got a huge jail count, that must mean you're not doing your job. But he would never take a plea unless it was the right thing to do, to hay with the jail count. In fact, none of my pleas, don't worry about that. But I've seen him take a plea from a prosecutor and go, the bench, i.e. me, the bench rejects the plea agreement. I advise both counsel to continue plea negotiations or we will strike a jury. Yeah, he didn't have a problem doing that if the plea was too low or out of place or inappropriate. Yeah. What did that mean for me? That meant I had to go on trial calendar every other week to keep the jail count low and to get an appropriate sentence at trial. Okay? These judges don't give a flying fig. What the hey? Let this guy walk free? Say, well, we're going to get him evaluated, but you let him walk free. You're so concerned about his mental state that you want a forensic mental evaluation, but you let him walk free to murder Arena? Oh, yeah. They need to be thrown off the bench, Kelly.
Well, Nancy, that will ultimately be up to the people who vote for him, because in some states they can vote for who they want as their judge, but then also the governor can appoint the state judges as well. So it's going to be different depending on the state. But yes, and that's their ultimate decision of whether or not that they want someone on the bench to serve the people, because the judge ultimately is the decider of the fact. And sadly, in this case, this gentleman was not in jail or being mentally evaluated, and he committed this heinous, heinous crime of a beautiful young girl.
What do you have to do to get a judge off the bench? What, put a stick of dynamite under their rear end to say, it's over? You're going to have to go get a regular job like everybody else? Look, at Crime Stories, we don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. In fact, we could not care less than we do. And I don't care who likes or dislikes Trump. That is not my concern. But what he is saying here is true.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, we saw the results of these policies when a 23-year-old woman who came here from Ukraine met her bloody end on a public train. And here's a picture of it. This is the picture of it. And this is a picture of the woman, a beautiful young girl that never had problems in life, with a magnificent future in this country. And now she's dead. She was slaughtered by a deranged monster who was roaming free after 14 prior arrests.
From Friends at Fox.
Without warning, DeCarlos Brown pulls out a pocket knife, stands, and lunges over the seat, stabbing Irina in the neck. As he walks away, Irina fights desperately for her life, clutching her neck to stop the flow of blood, unable to call for help.
And the passersby stood there and let it happen. I don't know if you are familiar with the Kitty Genovese case. I had to learn about it in first year of law school. Kitty Genovese, may she rest in peace, was brutally raped and murdered. There were scores of onlookers that watched the attack and did nothing, to the point that it is now called the Kitty Genovese syndrome. To Dr. Sue Kornbluth, renowned expert, please explain the Kitty Genovese syndrome.
Yeah, you know, Nancy, you hit on something that is very accurate here. So the Kitty Genovese case in 1964 was that she was getting brutally murdered, and people heard about this, and nobody took it on to call the police about this. Why? Because everybody believes that somebody else is going to do it. So it's about the diffusion of responsibility. But let me say this. When you are witnessing something, it is everybody's responsibility to jump in right away and do something. Not bring out your phone so that you can get your viral clip. And it's not okay to think that somebody else is going to step in and do something. We all have the responsibility as citizens and human beings to have empathy and compassion. And so when you see something that is going on, it is everybody's responsibility to jump in and do something. And that didn't happen here quick enough. And I want to remind people of that. It is everybody's responsibility to jump in right away and call 911 to get help for somebody in need. That is what you would want if something was happening to you. It's not an excuse anymore that you're going into trauma and you're not doing this, because you have enough whereabouts in your mind to get your video camera up and video it. And this just kills me, because perhaps if this happened, this beautiful young lady could have survived.
You know, it takes it another step to Joseph Scott Morgan, professor at Jacksonville State University. Not only did they not help her, finally one guy runs up and tries to staunch the flow of blood with his own shirt. They not only didn't act to help her, they actively began videoing her dying. Now, Kitty Genovese was murdered outside her apartment and a full view of everyone else in an apartment complex in Queens. She was attacked, and attacked three separate occasions before she actually died. And everyone stood by. The people that watched Irina be attacked and die, they not only did nothing, they actively began videoing the carnage, Joe Scott.
Yeah, and it's like they're living in an alternate universe. What good is that? Is that videography going to do you? Heard someone mention just a second ago going viral. So that you're telling me that trumps this young woman's life. You've already been visited by a monster that was just among you. He's exited stage right at this point. Oh, now let's take a look and video all that's left here. As her life literally seeps out of her neck onto the filthy floor of this train, where she's just trying to get by in life, having escaped a war zone, and now she's in Charlotte, North Carolina, and gets stabbed in the throat by this guy. And let me tell you what, if you like that, let me tell you one more thing. You were talking about judges and this guy being cut loose on the rest of society. Nancy, there's something that's gone unmentioned here. After he perpetrates this crime, does everybody notice how casually he just kind of walks away? It's almost like he's used to violence. It's almost like he knows he is not going to be punished. This guy has to be off the streets. They cannot let him back out there. He is the worst of us. He needs to be retained. He needs to be held to account. He never needs to see the light of day again.
You know what? I agree with you, but don't you understand it's a day late and a dollar short? All of these judges should have had him off the street at the get-go. But there he is taking his shirt off. God forbid that anyone sees blood on his shirt after he murders Irina. Tom Green, everything Joe Scott Morgan just said is correct.
Absolutely. But, you know, we're looking at cashless bail. We're looking at restorative justice when we know what works. Incapacitation works. If he'd have been locked up, she'd be alive. Who else is he victimized? Why is he even on that rail? He has no job. What does he do? How did he get on? How did he afford to get the ticket to get on there? Here she is coming home from work, like you said, coming from a war zone. She's a survivor. And to be snuffed out by this coward, this animal?
Or anybody, not just some beautiful cover girl like her, but anybody. What if that had been a child in front of him? And to Dr. Sue Kornbluth joining us, I just want an addendum to the Kitty Genovese case. I don't know if you recall, his name was Winston Mosley. He murdered her at age 29. He confessed. He was tried. He was convicted. We paid for his three hots and a cot for 52 years. He lived to age 81. I mean, there in the library, meeting with lawyers, reading books, enjoying his meals, blah, blah. 52 years we paid for him after he murdered, raped, and murdered, brutally murdered Kitty Genovese. Now, mirror image DeCarlos Brown. Same thing. He should have already been behind bars. And this, and everybody not only did nothing, they videoed it.
It's so troubling, Nancy. It's so disturbing. And what I hope happens here is this guy is put in the justice system once and for all and, you know, seeks the judge here seeks justice for what has gone on here. Because as you said before, to me, there is no room for him to have been let out into the streets without having a thorough forensic evaluation done. Do you know, I believe I read, Nancy, that he had already been arrested 14 to 22 times, and the mental health evaluation was just ordered this past July? Are you kidding me? He should have been evaluated for day one. It was his mother that took him to get evaluated, and then they said that he had schizophrenia. But let me say this, schizophrenia, right? Yes, that is a mental disorder. But not all schizophrenics are murderers. Schizophrenics take their medication, and some of them do very well. For me, Nancy, this was a drop in the legal system, and a judge, unfortunately, did not do his job and put this mentally ill person back into society when he was already doing things to hurt others.
Well, another thing, Dr. Sue, is if they were so worried, they must not have been that worried about his mental ailment, if it exists, because if they were, why would they let him walk out the front door? So they must not have been too worried about all of us or about Irina. Guys, hello. We hear your phone calls from jail. I'm not telling you anything you shouldn't already know, but people still yak. The smartest people yak behind bars. They cannot keep their pie holes shut. And here is DeCarlos Brown yakking with his sister.
You said something in your body did what?
Nah, the material, put like this, the material used my body to stab the lady.
And so she just got stabbed.
Yeah. You know that's not me. I'm talking about just for no reason. But since they did that, now they got to investigate the material my body is supposed to. Since they want to do all that, now they got to investigate.
It's funny because she's from the Ukraine. She's from Russia. And, you know, they got a war. They had a war going on against the United States. So I'm just trying to understand, out of all people, why her?
I don't have nothing. They just lashed out on her. That's what happened. They lashed out on her. Whoever was working the material, they lashed out on her.
They, obviously they is him. He lashed out. If you know or think you know anything about Irina's murder, even if you think it's inconsequential, it may not matter, please call the tip line. 704-334-1600. Repeat, 704-334-1600. Now, we remember an American hero, Sheriff Robert Rogers, Wilcox County Sheriff's, Georgia, killed in the line of duty after 22 years in law enforcement, leaving behind a grieving widow, Haley, and son, Robert. American hero, Sheriff Robert Rogers. Thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us. Nancy Grace signing off. I'll see you tomorrow night. And until then, good night, friend.